have you been affected at all by the unauthorised use of fire hydrants? They're impacting water supply in the Newbridge area. And I'm happy to say Irish Water are joining me this afternoon. Kevin Love is a senior water engineer and he's the regional lead for Kildare. Hello to you, Kevin.
Hello, and thanks for having me on this afternoon.
Well, thank you for joining me, Kevin. So what exactly is happening at the moment with the fire hydrants in the area of Newbridge?
Okay, thanks. So just on Monday, look, we got reports of interruption to supply in the Newbridge area. And on investigation, we found that there was unauthorised use of hydrants by third parties that was impacting supplies. Now, just for the benefit of your listeners, what that does is when a hydrant is opened, it has the potential to reduce supply going to people's homes and businesses, but it can also reduce pressure, particularly customers on high ground or out in the ends of network supply networks. So it does have a big impact on our ability to meet our customers' needs and customers' demands.
And, like, I know it depends on case to case, but how long would people be looking at before their pressure, etc., is back to normal?
So just we're working there at the moment. So look, we have kind of been working with the authorities and look, just acknowledge the effort of Kildare County Council on the ground to try and make supplies restored. We have been doing some work over the last couple of days to redirect flows and reconfigure networks just so that we maintain our supplies to all. Everybody should have their water supply back now. And we are taking steps with the Gardaí to prevent any further misuse of the hydrants, you know, by just kind of conservation awareness and trying to just, you know, kind of make sure that our hydrants are secure and that they're not being misused.
And Kevin, in the Newbridge area, sure, just how many households would have been affected, do you know?
So just on the number of households, look, I suppose it depends, but the areas that were affected was the Nace Road, Little Connell, Old Connell and Rossby areas, and some estates in Wesley Manor, Barrowcourt, Abbey Road, Park Road, Willow Road and Maple Road. So there's a large area affected from Buxley's Crossroads down to Connellmore Crossroads in Newbridge.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Kevin Love. He's Senior Water Engineer and Regional Lead for County Kildare, or just Kildare, with Irish Water. Now, just to note, the issues of unauthorised use of fire hydrants include insufficient or no water to fight fires. The loss of water through hydrants limits the water available, obviously, to supply the homes and businesses. Kevin touched on there Baroda Court, Connell Drive area, Great Connell, Little Connell, that area. Wellesley Manor was one of the estates also affected. The loss of water reduces the water pressure to supply homes and businesses. Potential flooding of premises and damage to property. Serious damage to the pipelines and to the hydrants themselves and possible contamination of the public water supply. If you have been affected, let us know here at the station. The usual lines 0833 97 97 97. The text and WhatsApp. If you need to phone us at 045 89 8999. But if you need to get in touch with Irish Water for any reason, something has happened, they are appealing to the public not to tamper or open the fire hydrants, obviously without the permission, but you can get in contact with Irish Water on 1800 278 278, and they're open, that helpline, 24 hours a day. I am joined on the line now by Kildare Senator, that is Fiona O'Loughlin of Fianna Fáil. How are you today, Fiona?
Good afternoon, Ciara. I'm great. Thank you. Enjoying the lovely weather, the same as everyone else. And as you said, it's not often that we get it, so we have to enjoy it while we can.
Yes. Stay safe. Obviously, we advise everybody, but enjoy it because we don't get it that often. Listen, lack of toilet facilities at Newbridge train station. This is an ongoing issue, Fiona, and we are coming up. Many people won't want me to say it, but to the school season, you know, people going back to college, going back maybe into the office a little bit more while the summer winds down, and the lack of toilet facilities at the station are just not good enough, as you've said.
I think it's an absolute disgrace, Ciara, and Éireann Road Éireann have listened to me for years rattling on about this, but I think it's really, really wrong because we never know anybody's health situation. So apart from any one of us feeling the need to go to the bathroom when we arrive at the station, or indeed, you know, arrive when we're getting off a train, there are many people who, for health reasons, don't know when they're going to be taken short and need to be able to use the bathroom. And the situation there in Newbridge is that the toilets have been closed for years. Now, I understand that, unfortunately, sometimes vandals had gotten in and had really left the toilets in a horrific state. And that's simply wrong, and obviously we can't condone that. But there has to be a way that the toilets can be kept clean and that customers of Éireann Road Éireann would be able to use it. So, you know, using a token to get into a door or something. Now, in speaking to the staff there in Newbridge, they say that it's a union issue with them, and that the unions have advised them that they shouldn't have to clean the toilets. And
Éireann Road Éireann, what's their main line on the issue?
The main line, I really felt about 2 years ago that I had gotten somewhere with them, and they had agreed informally that they would actually...
Was this pre-pandemic?
Pre-pandemic, that they would look at having the toilets open while there are people there on duty in the station. And I really felt that we had gotten someplace, happy with that. That was a compromise. But unfortunately then, their minds were changed. But I think it's time again, looking at all the commuter issues in relation to price, in relation to safety on trains, re-looking at this again and determined to... I have asked Éireann Road Éireann for another meeting and really trying to get somewhere with this, because it often happens, you know, that you can go for a train, you miss the train, it's often happened to me, and then you have to wait maybe half an hour or three quarters of an hour for a train, because one of Éireann Road Éireann's points was that there were toilets on the train, so when people got on the train, but that's not good enough. We simply have to have the toilets in the station in a workable and open condition. And obviously, that doesn't mean they have to be open 24/7. I think while trains are running, they should be.
And possibly Fiona, if you look elsewhere in the county, or would say Sallins train station, are their toilets open?
I honestly don't know about Sallins. As far as I know, Kildare is. But that is something I intend to do, is to look at all the different stations that are close to us and make a comparison. And if, you know, through that, we can, by saying that we're discriminated against in relation to it, that's going to add more power to the lobby, I feel.
Yeah, it does seem a bit weird if one area of the county can do so and not another. Fiona, as we're on this issue, I know you have posted today on your social media platforms about you advocating, along with many, many others, and we've discussed it, for the local commuters in South Kildare to have a better deal and an extension of that short hop zone. So people would say in Kildare South are paying basically double than that of Kildare North commuters. People going from Newbridge to Sallins every day. You have asked people to give you their experiences of commuting from south of the county and the issues they're facing. You have been continuing discussions with the NTA. Any update on it?
No, but my understanding is that quite soon that they'll be ready to publish research that they have done in relation to the differential between the fares, between the short hop zone and those that are outside it. I'm looking for an extension of the short hop zone to Newbridge and then to look at a medium hop zone after that. So I do feel that certainly before the budget that there will be an opportunity for the public to be able to participate in a survey and to be able to make their submissions known in a formal way. Now, obviously, I'm gathering up information myself, but Éireann Road Éireann and the NTA will be doing that also. And we'll be making a big push come just pre-budget to ensure that this is covered in the budget, because it's very unfair. And equally, it means that a lot of people are driving from beyond Newbridge into Sallins, clogging up the roads. Particularly, a lot of parents are bringing their third level students over to Sallins, because we have the situation where accommodation is so expensive in Dublin that young people need to use public transport. And particularly when there's more than one student in a house, to have to pay double the fees, it's just not good enough.
Fiona, what would be a medium hop zone for you? Give me areas of the county of Kildare South that would be in the medium hop.
Well, I'd like to see the extension, say, to 50 kilometres, 50, 55 kilometres, which could bring in Newbridge and Kildare Town. Then after that, we would have areas like Athy. Now, the price differential for Athy is actually much better kilometre by kilometre than it would be for Newbridge. And then we'd have places
in fairness,
like Port Harrington and Monastrevin.
You know, Athy is parts 40 kilometres, is it 35 from parts of Sallins, obviously?
Yeah, exactly. So you would have places then like Monastrevin, Port Harrington, Athy would be in a, say, a medium hop as opposed to a short hop.
Okay, well, Fiona, I appreciate you taking the time this afternoon. Have a wonderful time in that weather. That is Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin of Kildare, of course, speaking about the toilet facilities in Newbridge train station. An operation to reduce antisocial issues. This is on Dublin's Bus, Dart and Lewis networks. Have so far brought about only, as it's written here, 65 criminal charges. This is despite thousands of incidents being logged on the Garda Pulse system. And as you well know, many of us travel on the Lewis Dublin Bus, the Dart now being extended out to Maynooth, etc., every single day of the week. So we are affected here in County Kildare. And joining me now is the General Secretary of the National Bus and Rail Union. That is Dermot O'Leary. Thank you for joining me, Dermot. How are you doing today?
Hi, Ciara. Very good. Just hope you get a chance to enjoy that fine weather. It's lovely.
I know. I'm going to go out after this again.
Good
got some
good
got some vitamin
good
D a few minutes ago, so I'll be all right for the next
indeed
half hour.
Indeed, yeah.
Looking at these figures, Dermot, over 3,000 incidents have been recorded by the Gardaí carrying out patrols and responding to the call-outs. This is under Operation Saul. It's during the first 6 months of this year. But 65 criminal charges, as the General Secretary of the NBRU, do you think that's enough?
No, I kind of laughed in a sense when I saw Better Call Saul, because that's probably, we've called everybody else at this stage, from security guards to frontline staff and all that. But look, it's a serious message here, I suppose, and you'll know, I've been on your show many times in relation to calling for a dedicated Garda Public Transport Division, an actual exclusive police resource for public transport. And I suppose what the figures demonstrate, and I think what concerns both myself and my members, and I suppose members of the public, if they can buy into what I'm trying to say here, is that there's a perception being given by I think people in authority that any social behaviour is not as bad as I'm suggesting and other people are suggesting. But you look at 3,061 incidents as reported by the Times this morning, and some of the figures that were not prosecuted or some of the figures that were not worthy of recording would be...
Dermot, do you know what isn't worthy? What would constitute as not worthy?
For example, so let me give an example. Unruly behaviour, threatening language, drunken disorderly, all the stuff that would frighten people that travel on public transport away from it and would not certainly encourage people onto it. So there are incidents. I know for a fact that over the last number of weeks, Ciara, the way the incidents are being reported now has changed, and they're now called reportable incidents. And if you ask anybody, if a politician ask any of the operating companies what the level of incidents on social behaviour, they get a different figure than I have, for example. And again, I would be a bit concerned that if people are trying to do that, to downplay the seriousness of the issue, then they're doing a disservice to frontline staff and indeed the people that use public transport. And as I just touched upon there, we're trying to get people out of the cars, we're trying to get people to migrate from the motor car onto public transport. That's not going to happen if they read and listen to, slots like this on media. Their neighbours are telling them they witnessed a terrible experience.
If you just look at the breakdown of the number here, Dermot, it's 3,061, as you noted, incidents. This is between January and June 2022.
5 months, correct, yeah.
So of these, 2,979, they were classified as non-crime. But 82 were classified as crimes, yet 65 have resulted in criminal charges. Why the difference there?
I've no idea. And again, that's a question for the Gardaí, I suppose. But then again, it's an operational matter and they won't answer it succinctly as directly as we'd like them to answer it. But I suppose the underlying message here, as I said at the outset, is that there is a requirement for proper policing, as I'm calling it, on public transport. Again, the experience across the world, and we've done a bit of study in relation to transport police and transit police, as they call them, in some jurisdictions, most of them connected to the police force of the jurisdiction involved. And the evidence back from them has been, by and large, that 3,061 or 2,979 that you mentioned, most of those incidents are being reduced significantly because of the presence of a deterrent called the police force, in this case a Garda Public Transport Division. And again, if people thought there was consequences to their actions, and then I suspect that the figure we're talking about here would reduce if there was those consequences. Another thing that concerns us, of course, and it's been a debate for many years, Ciara, is that frontline staff across all services getting assaulted, there should be a mandatory sentence on that, we believe, including transport workers. And again, look, the Climate Change and Climate Action Plan suggests that they want 500,000 additional daily journeys between now and 2030 to go on to public transport. That's not going to happen in this type of environment, let's be honest with ourselves. And again, another issue that I was at a conference in March there in the Mansion House, the Dublin Lord Mayor, the Dublin Lord Mayor, the Green Party Lord Mayor, Alison Gilland, called it about people getting home home safely from work, particularly females late at night in the nighttime economy. It's horrendous. People are actually sleeping in restaurants and sleeping in bars until daylight hours appear so they can go home safe. And that's the type of environment that we know. That's not good for people that work in the nighttime economy. And again, it's not good. It's not a good message for public transport.
And I'd love to hear from our listeners this afternoon. Would you get on public transport at certain times of the day? Would that be impacted by your gender? Would it be impacted by the time of day? What type of transport you were getting on? Because in the context of public transport, as Dermot did point out, the acts could include unruly or loud behaviour that is not deemed to meet the threshold of a public order crime. A third party may also report their suspicions that a crime has been committed, but no evidence of criminal behaviour is found. Obviously key to ever prosecute anybody is having evidence. And then the non-crime incidents could also include reports that members of the public felt in fear or threatened, though the behaviour they were concerned about did not come to pass or was not criminal in nature. So I guess the whole not come to pass aspect of it, Dermot, means you can get threatened but nothing physically happens. Is that how someone was to take that?
I point your listeners, and you look at yourself, maybe you probably have looked at it before, I point your listeners towards an article written by Sarah Jane Murphy, a journalist in the Irish Times back in 2019, and her experience on the Dart to Dunleary. There was no crime committed, but she tells the story very well, and it was a very, very frightening experience for her. I don't think she travels in public transport anymore. I mean, that was her version back then, and it's a very scary description of what it was like for her. And again, no crime being committed, so that would actually speak directly to the point you just made.
Okay, well, Dermot O'Leary, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Of course, General Secretary there at the National Bus and Rail Union. And Helen McEntee, the Minister for Justice in this country, has said that the aim of this operation was to provide a safe environment for commuters utilising public transport. The operation was in place or is in place in South Central, North Central and South divisions of Dublin. But plans are now underway to extend the operation to the entire Dublin metropolitan region, which will obviously affect parts of County Kildare. Now, as part of Operation Sol, the Gardaí perform high visibility patrols of the Lewis, Dart and various bus services. That's to prevent and detect antisocial behaviour and public order offences. Have you felt safe as of late, on these public transport services? Let me know. We want to hear from you here at the station. The text and WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. And of course, you can phone us 045 89 8999. Now, tomorrow morning on Kildare Today, we're going to be speaking about the County Kildare Chamber Business Awards. I saw this article, and it just obviously is very relevant to things like, you know, business awards in our county. Five things women should know before starting a business. Women are encouraged, obviously, to be as entrepreneurial as possible. And I'm joined to discuss this by Professor Maura McAdam. She's full professor of management and the first director of entrepreneurship at DCU. Hello to you today, Professor McAdam.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for the invite. It's lovely to be here.
Well, it's lovely to speak with you. So, female entrepreneurship, how should women feel about the encouragement? Oh, women need to get into business. Can they sometimes find it a little bit condescending, maybe?
Oh, that's an interesting word to use in this context. And I think there is a fine balance to be achieved in terms of really encouraging everyone to be entrepreneurial and, you know, see the inclusiveness of entrepreneurship and not to targeting particular groups, but at the same time, encouraging women as well. So there is definitely a balance to be reached in terms of not singling out, not as we refer to as siloing, but in the same time, encouraging, and I would say everybody, to be entrepreneurial.
Yeah, I think it's across the board equality, isn't it, that people want to hear. But there are lots of women who want to begin businesses. And unfortunately, for many years, they did not feel confident enough. And some of that may be due to their gender, but that's not why we're speaking to you this afternoon in terms of that. But for those who are wanting to start a business, what are the main things you need to take into account really at the very beginning of the potential company, firm, whatever it is?
So I suppose there's a lot of sort of categories that you have to think about. And obviously there's things like your idea and the business and opportunity, the market and all of that stuff. But there's also the other level in terms of the individual your mindset, your ambition, your confidence, and more importantly, your self-belief that you can actually do this. So there's a lot of layers in terms of, yes, we have to, you know, it's a good idea and the market research. But I also, when I talk to women and I research women entrepreneurs, looking to really encourage them to believe that they can be an entrepreneur, that, you know, I can do this.
Yeah, you mentioned... You mentioned self-belief. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But you mentioned self-belief, and I just want to pick up on it really quickly, because you are researching so many female entrepreneurs, of course, but they have obviously taken the plunge and they have the confidence to go out into the world. But even with their confidence and what you're noting, do you find that there still is a difference with those who have been brave enough to go out and start a business compared to, say, their male counterparts?
Well, yes, in terms of... everyone has, I suppose, different levels of self-belief, and they can change on a day-to-day basis, and they can change on a monthly basis. So they vary. So yes, women that do take that plunge, they obviously do have a certain level of self-belief, but it's just encouraging women to realize that, you know, that can change, that can vary, but look at ways in which they can actually, develop it and enhance it. So things like, you know, surrounding yourself with a tribe, you know, we refer to, you know, your network of people that encourage you, support you and inspire you. And also then to, be involved in other maybe formal networks as well. So, yes, there are certain levels of self-belief, but there are also things we can do in terms of actually trying to develop that within ourselves as well. And actually taking the plunge, taking small actions on a daily basis, that actually does serve to increase our self-belief as well.
You've noted, don't just think big, think bigger. What do you mean by this imposter syndrome?
Yeah, we have a tendency, you know, to say to entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs, oh, think big. But I actually encourage entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs, yes, think big, but okay, how can we go even bigger than that? Because mindset very much matters in terms of, again, self-belief and also ambition. So if we think, you know, we're going to maybe start a £1 million business, okay, let's think about 10 million and let's think about even more than that. And then our, you know, our objectives, our actions will all actually aspire towards that. So thinking bigger expands what we can be, our businesses can be, and also the growth ambitions as well.
Moira, do you think the pandemic has driven women to be more focused in terms of beginning businesses?
Yes, and I'm undergoing a project at the moment with a colleague at Queen's University in Belfast, and that is one of the things that we're actually looking at, and it's particularly the move of women entrepreneurs to online businesses and digital businesses. And several of our sample actually have left really good corporate jobs because the pandemic has given them an opportunity to reflect on their current lifestyle and working patterns. And also then, yes, also given them time to think about, you know, maybe the idea, the business idea that they had. And they think, well, okay, this is time now for me to develop this. And also then to, as you said, take the plunge as well.
You have conducted 35,000 hours of research. You've interviewed over 300 female entrepreneurs in various stages of their journey. Is there one commonality you've come across when speaking to all these women?
I suppose it's probably point one, and I have researched women across many different nationalities and also geographical contexts as well. And women tend to be reluctant to actually say, I am an entrepreneur, and actually claim that identity. And several have said in the past, oh, this is my wee business, or this is the wee project that I'm working on. And you'd be surprised sometimes that the wee project or the wee business might be, you know, a million euro project or business. So there is a tendency to actually very clearly state, I am an entrepreneur.
Okay, so the main takeaway from this, I guess, is to just have more confidence in yourself.
And more, yes, so more self-belief, more confidence, but also, you know, take the daily, even little steps every day. And through that, I think there's a tendency when we think about entrepreneurship and starting a business, that it's, you know, we have to do so many things and we have to do them all at once. But even on a day-to-day basis, you know, taking the next step, whether that's, you know, looking up something on the internet, reaching out to somebody who might be helpful, all those little steps bring you closer to your goal, but they also increase your self-confidence and self-belief as well.
It's funny that you worded it like that, trying to do everything all at once, because I think all genders, really, truly, I know all genders feel like this, but a lot of women feel like that. I have so much to do and I have to get it all done. And then you just become completely stressed out and unfortunately burnt out. And you don't want that when you're going into, you know, the beginning of business.
And it's definitely, and I have noticed it amongst women, this idea, not even that we have to do everything, but we also have to do it perfectly.
Yeah, we have to
and
do
we
it
also
amazing.
Have to have, yes, we have to have all our little ducks in a row before we actually leave the house in the morning. And you know, that's very unrealistic. And also with entrepreneurship, it's very unrealistic as well, because the entrepreneurial environment is constantly changing.
Okay, well, hopefully some of your advice this afternoon has spurred some entrepreneurial spirit into our listeners who would like to start a business. No matter what gender you are, you may be encouraged by some of that advice from Professor Maura McAdam of DCU. She's full Professor of Management and the first Director of Entrepreneurship at the University. Thank you, Maura.
Thank you.